Penguin Random House Audio presents The Warden and the Wolf King, The Wing Feather Saga, Book 4, written and read by Andrew Peterson.
Book 4 of The Wing Feather Saga. This one's for you, dear reader. You're almost home. I dreamed of a song, I heard it sung. In the ear of my soul, its strange notes rung. What were its words, I could not tell. Only the voice I heard right well. A voice with a wild, melodious cry, reaching and longing afar and high. Sorrowful triumph and hopeful strife, gainful death and newborn life. George MacDonald, 1842. Part 1. The Green Hollows. In the fourth epoch, in the year 435, during the peaceful reign of Lander Wingfeather and his wife Ilya Finley of the Green Hollows, a girl was born. Her elder brother, Olmer, would be the throne warden, and the girl was to be the High Queen of the Shining Isle. Her name was Madia, and her beauty was renowned in the free lands of Dang. When she was a young woman of marrying age, she paid a summer visit to Ban Rona in the Green Hollows, where King Lander and Queen Ilya often sailed when the wind was warm. There they attended the Bannock Durga and spent the days in happiness while the Hollows folk reveled in gamery. Of all the pleasures of Ban Rona, young Madia most enjoyed stealing away from the games at the Field of Finley to the cavernous halls of the great library. There she met a bright young man named Bonifer Scoon. From the Aeneriad, The Fall of the Fourth Epoch, as compiled by Oscar N. Retief, Esquire, appreciator of the strange, the neat, and or the yummy, chief librarian, historian, and booksmeller of the great library of Ban Rona. Chapter 1. The Slog of War.
"What happens next?" Kalmar asked.
"How am I supposed to know? I've never been in a war," Janner said. "But we've been here for 3 hours at least, and we haven't eaten a thing. Look, all I know is we're supposed to sit here and be quiet until the tribes are finished pledging, or whatever it's called. And we're all hungry, but at least you don't get cold.
How many tribes are left?
You can count.
Wait, how many tribes did we start with?
Cal, can you just find some way to be interested in what's going on? Mama said this hasn't happened in decades, and they're here for you, after all. The least you can do is show some interest.
Shh, here comes a tribesman."
Janner and Kalmar sat on a wooden platform overlooking the Field of Finley, now covered with snow. These were the fields, Janner remembered, where many years ago Podo Helmer had won the heart of Wendell and Igaby by competing in the games of the Bannock Durga against the roughest and rowdiest of the Hollows folk. But there were no games today. Today was about war, which meant boredom. That morning, Nia had woken the brothers in their bedroom at Chimney Hill with the reminder that the day of tribute had come, and that as High King and Throne Warden of Anira, their presence was required. After a quick breakfast, prepared by Podo and Friva, Nia presented the brothers and their sister with formal attire. Lili got a white dress, lined with burble fur and a gray speckled coat that fell about her like a blanket. It was held around her shoulders by a silver brooch in the shape of a beaming star. When Lili emerged from her bedroom with the dress and robe on, her hair draped over one shoulder and her cheeks burning with the hope of her own beauty, the boys were speechless. Podo, who was wearing an apron and clopping one leg at around the table, collecting dirty dishes, looked up and whispered, "Mother Moonlight, she's pretty." The brothers got no such compliments, but they felt handsome in their royal clothes. Kalmar needed no coat since he was already covered with silvery brown fur. Instead, he wore a black leather vest lined with blood-red fabric, fastened down the front with shiny silver buttons, each of which bore the Aeneran dragon, the same insignia Janner had seen on Uncle Artham's journals back in Glipwood. Nia draped a black cloak over his shoulders and fastened it at the neck with a silver sun. She tried to put a crown on Cal's head, not an official Aeneran crown, she told them, but something she had commissioned from a smith in Ban Rona, a circlet that would at least make him look kingly enough for the ceremony. But after several failed attempts to secure it over his wolf ears, which constantly twitched, Nia decided to forego the crown, much to Kalmar's relief. Finally, Janner was given a black coat of polished leather, with boots and gloves to match. When he pulled the gloves on and wiggled his fingers, he noticed on the back of each hand the same Aeneran dragon stitched into the leather with crimson thread. "Here," Nia said, as she draped a black cloak over Janner's shoulders. He noticed when she drew near to fasten his brooch, which was in the shape of a crescent moon,
that instead of looking up at her, they were eye to eye. "When did you get so tall?" Nia asked quietly. She adjusted his cloak and her hands lingered on his shoulders. "You look like a throne warden. Tall and handsome and humble. Keep an eye on Kalmar today. This ceremony is exactly the kind of thing he loathes." Janner glanced at Cal, who was hunched over the table, brushing crumbs from breakfast into a little pile, then licking them up. "Kalmar!" Nia snapped, and he jerked upright and wiped his hands on his cloak. "Kalmar!" Nia said again, and he grabbed a napkin from the table and cleaned his hands and cloak with a nervous laugh. "Kalmar!" Nia said, snatching the napkin from him. He hadn't noticed that it was soiled with sweetberry jam, jam that was now smeared all over his new cloak and his hands, which he absentmindedly wiped on his vest. "Out!" Nia ordered. Janner bustled Kalmar and Lili through the door, where Oscar and Retief waited with the sled hitched and ready. Cal bounded into the wagon. "In the words of Chancho Fenor, you three look magnificent. Is that sweetberry jam?" Oscar pointed at Kalmar's cloak. Somehow, even though his face was covered in fur, Cal's cheeks seemed to flush as he reached down and lifted Lili in behind him. Janner clambered up the other side. "It's going to be a fine day, Jules." Oscar clicked the horse into motion and pulled his scarf over his mouth. He was already a big fellow, but the many layers of coats, cloaks, and blankets made him look enormous. All Janner could see of the old man was his bright red nose and spectacles peeking out from between the scarf and his cowl. The rest of him was a mountainous pile of blankets. After an hour of riding through the snow, they crested the hill and saw what seemed to be the entire population of the Green Hollows, gathered around the perimeter of the Field of Finley. Out of the silence of the long ride came the sudden racket of the multitude, the whinny of horses, the snapping of many flags in the wind. The aroma of campfires mingled with that of meat roasting on spits and the odor of horse manure. Each tribe had erected its own main tent and surrounded it with smaller ones, between which were wagons, horses, and campfires. Thousands of Hollows folk stood in groups around the fires. Others had struck up games and were rolling in the snow or chasing one another out beyond the tents. But the center of the Field of Finley was immaculate, a smooth circular blanket of white as long and wide as an arrow shot. Not a single footprint marred the snow, though the path around it was muddied with traffic. At a section of the field nearest the road, a platform had been erected, and a man standing beside it raised a hand in greeting when he saw the wing feathers. Even at a distance, Janner recognized the tall, bearded figure of Rudrick, Keeper of the Hollows. Janner felt a tug of grief. Rudrick hadn't meant to kill his father, Janner knew that, but it didn't make the pain or the awkwardness disappear, for either Janner or for Rudrick, who had scarcely been seen at Chimney Hill in the month since Esben's death. Rudrick was a good man, and Janner liked him, but he had become an emblem of his father's absence. Janner couldn't imagine how Nia must feel, Nia, who had been in love with Rudrick up to the very day that Esben returned. Oscar grunted.
"Right. Well, as some author surely said somewhere, we'd better get on with it."
He drove the sled down to the platform and greeted Rudrick. "Oscar, good to see you," Rudrick said. He extended a hand to Lili, who took it after slight hesitation, and allowed him to lift her out of the wagon and lower her gently to the ground. Then Rudrick nodded a greeting to Janner and Cal, though he only met their eyes for a moment. "This way, Wingfeathers. It's going to be a long day, but this is important if we're going to be an army worthy of battle." Next to the platform was a tent, with two Durgan guildsmen standing guard at the entrance. Their black hoods were pulled low over their faces, and their arms were crossed. When Janner and his siblings followed Rudrick inside, the guildsmen nodded a silent greeting, first at Rudrick, then at Janner and Lili. It was hard to tell if it was his imagination, but Janner didn't think they acknowledged his wolf brother. He didn't have time to think more about it, because as soon as he entered the tent, he saw 12 tribesmen and as many tribeswomen standing at attention. They were gathered around a long table beneath the iron branches of a chandelier aflicker with candles. Janner could tell it was meant to resemble the great tree of Ban Rona. He couldn't help noticing the irony that only a few months ago Nia had declared Turelay and put her bloody handprint on the tree in order to save Kalmar from the very people who were now pledging their allegiance to him. Rudrick took his place at the head of the table and gestured at 3 empty seats. "Welcome, clans of the Hollows," Rudrick nodded at the children. "Welcome, Jules of Anira." Then, at once, everyone in the room sat. The Wingfeather children looked around in confusion, then plopped into their seats. The men at the table all looked like typical Hollows men, barrel chests, long mustaches and beards,
faces and hands that bore knots and scars from years of hard work and harder
Sample complete. Ready to continue?